Welcome to another episode of What Matters in North Carolina. I am your host, Matt Calder, and today we will be talking with Brian Balfour of the Civitas Institute about the Durham-Orange County light rail project, the pitfalls, the problems, the projections, all the P's that are established with that project. And we are going to get to that in just a minute. But first, I want to talk to you about subscribing to the show. If you're not already subscribed, you are missing out on the ease with which you can listen to this show. So just go wherever you listen to podcasts and search What Matters in North Carolina, and you will be able to subscribe to the show. It'll come right down to your device. No effort from you whatsoever. Just click play. If you're not following along with us on social media, you should do that too on Facebook and Twitter at What Matters NC. That is at What Matters NC on Facebook and Twitter. Now, so we've got you subscribed, we've got you following along online, but you want to check out some older episodes of the show, and you can do that too simply by going to freedomactionnetwork.com and just go through there, go through the older episodes of this show, or listen to the Free to Brew show or the NC Gun Dad show and episodes of those on there as well. Now we will move right into Brian Balfour talking about the Durham-Orange County Light Rail Project. So we have Brian Balfour joining us now at the Civitas Institute, who, in light of a recent, I guess, movement forward on Durham's light rail project, is taking the opportunity to kind of rehash the issue and talk with us about it. How are you doing today, Brian?
I'm doing well, Matt. Thank you. Yeah, so what inspired this really was an article in the Raleigh News and Observer recently, and they were kind of celebrating this another step forward in this process of bringing this Durham-Orange County light rail project to fruition. And just kind of to quote real quick from the article, they say, "Fortunately, the process took a strong surge forward last week with a green light from the Federal Transit Administration to move the 17.7-mile light rail project to the engineering phase. This step will be the last design step. With the blueprint complete, the federal government will decide whether to provide 50% of the project's $2.47 billion cost." Now, one thing that leapt out of me immediately from that was that figure, the $2.47 billion cost, because we've been following this project for a while now and tracking it. And just last spring, when we were writing about it, the estimated price tag for it was $1.6 billion. That's more than a 50% increase in the projected cost estimates. And before the project has even broken ground, it's still in the planning phase. So, I mean, if this is a harbinger of things to come in terms of the finances for this project, it doesn't bode well for local taxpayers.
Right. So, I mean, that's kind of a big wow number. And I mean, I think about how expensive that's going to be based for how many people it'll serve is my question. I mean, because, you know, different types of public transportation, you got buses, you have light rail, there's some other options, but those are your big options, I guess. And a bus line can change and move. And I mean, and light rail really doesn't have that option. I mean, you make a track and that's where your track is.
Yeah. I mean, light rail is typically, you know, it's much more permanent in nature. And also, you know, speaking of projected costs, so the projected costs are already increasing before the project has even started, up to nearly $2.5 billion. And typically the norm for these type of projects across not only the U.S. but across the world basically is that for these light rail projects, they're notorious for running well over estimated costs. For instance, we've had this experience down in Charlotte in the recent past. Their light rail project exceeded projected costs by about 2.5 times. So now when it's all said and done, we're looking at, you know, just kind of given the history of light rail and the expensive nature of it, this Durham-Orange County line could very well exceed $5 billion in cost by the time it's said and done. And then you brought up kind of the relative efficiency of light rail versus other means of transportation. So let's just kind of break this down real quickly. This cost for this project, this light rail, Durham-Orange light rail line, that's projected to cover 17 miles at a cost of nearly $2.5 billion. That comes out to $145 million per mile. That's just for the construction costs. And that, of course, that's on the slight chance that they actually keep the costs into those under those projections. Now, compare that $145 million per mile compared to estimates of what it costs to construct a four-lane urban highway that can be built for roughly about $8 to $10 million per mile. So that means this light rail project is going to be about 14 times more expensive per mile than four-lane highway. I mean, which do you think would move more traffic?
I mean, and that's it. I was just hearing that number, $145 million a mile.
Correct.
That seems insane. And with the possibility of being double that, you know, $300 million a mile, and that is just I'm having trouble wrapping my mind around that figure. And then the fact that it's not flexible in any way, and it's not, that's what always gets me about it. I mean, we're you know, New York City is a walking city, or, you know, they have their subway system and everything's so compact. We're not like that in North Carolina. Raleigh and Durham are separate cities. They're close cities. They're large cities, but you're not going to be taking a train or a subway from somewhere in Raleigh to Durham. I mean, that's it. You know, look at Raleigh, how expanded Raleigh is. We're here in North Raleigh in this office. I may need to go downtown, or I may need to go to some other part of Raleigh. I need a car to get there. I need a car to get there. And I don't see there being enough trains in the world to change that fact.
Yeah, absolutely right. And you know, on the subject of density, you know, there's been lots of studies done about this topic of light rail and the kind of population density required for it to even make come close to making economic sense. And, you know, Raleigh and the Triangle area is one place that had been evaluated by a lot of these studies, and they say it's nowhere close to being having that kind of population density for that to make sense. And then, you know, this kind of gets back again to, you know, what's a better use of these scarce resources? I mean, if we are going to spend, in this case, say $2.5 billion, you know, we can get this 17 miles of light rail track that's inflexible, and people need to drive their cars to go park and anyways to go, you know, to catch the light rail line anyways. And think about how many passengers it can move. This light rail line is projected to carry on average 622 passengers per hour. Conversely, highways can accommodate 2,200 cars per lane per hour. So this four-lane highway, for example, could accommodate 8,800 cars per hour. Compare that to 622 passenger hours for the light rail. So basically, you know, for the same amount of money, we could construct nearly 250 miles worth of four-lane highways for the same price, for the same price tag as this Durham Orange County light rail line. And not only that, the light rail will carry only about 7% as many commuters. So, I mean, it's just mind-boggling, especially when you start looking at the opportunity costs, you know, what we could be spending this money on to try to mitigate congestion, try to make sure traffic flows and it's more convenient for people to get where they need to go. I mean, it's just light years difference in between how efficient these funds could be allocated, you know, just using this four-lane highway as an example compared to the light rail. I mean, it's just absolutely absurd, you know, and people around Raleigh sitting in traffic jams and bottlenecks all the time in their cars day after day, you know, if they're looking at this like, oh my gosh, what could we do with 250 miles worth of four-lane highways? How much better our commute would be if we had that? Instead, we're going to be stuck with this light rail boondoggle that's going to be carrying you know, a tiny fraction as many people.
So playing devil's advocate for a minute, I mean, that's kind of, I guess I could hear a light rail proponent saying a sort of that same sentence in a way, saying there's so many people on the road, we need to get some people off of the road, maybe not bigger roads, and get people on light rail, on public transportation to take that car off the road. But I guess what's your answer, or is that feasible? Or maybe you're just the other side, you're the curmudgeon who just can't see the picture, can't see the big picture is kind of what they would describe your viewpoint as. But what's the answer to it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a great thought, but the reality doesn't bear that out. I mean, people don't stop driving when there's a light rail option available in their community. Ridership Actual ridership typically falls well short of the projections. There's only a very small fraction of people for which the light rail is going to be useful for them. Like we said, I mean, it's a very specific track. And so, you know, what are you going to do? You get up in the morning, you got to drive to the light rail station, you got to wait until the thing arrives, and then you got to go to a specific destination. And what if that specific destination isn't anywhere near where you're trying to get to, say your office, for instance? So it's only serviceable, it's only useful for a very tiny fraction of the people anyways. So even if people wanted to get out of their cars and say, hey, I'd love to take a light rail to work, but it's just not convenient because it's not going to drop me off anywhere close to my office. And so how do I get to work then once I'm dropped off and I'm, you know, 5 miles away from my office anyways? So it's just not practical. Even for people who may otherwise want to take that, it's just not practical for them to do it.
Right. And that's, I mean, I'm from Johnston County, so I have a 45 minute commute on a good day. And what would I do? Would I drive to the nearest, you know, let's say, you know, I'm here in Raleigh, I'm talking about as if we had it in Raleigh, but would I drive to the nearest location, leave my car there all day while I hop on a train and then come back to my car that night? I mean, I can't see that for myself at all. And I think a lot of people are in that same booth. I mean, you can show me how it goes to my work, but what if I need to go and pick up my daughter in the middle of the day because she's sick? Do I have to work with a train schedule to try and get back to pick her up, or can I hop in the car, go pick her up, take her to the doctor?
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, you're hitting on another great point. It does not offer the kind of flexibility that a lot of people need. You know, like you said, if something comes up, you've got a family situation, you need to leave early. You know, so now what are you going to do? You can take the train all the way back to Johnson County, get in your car, and then drive to go pick up your daughter. You know, there's just a lot of inconveniences that are presented in this sort of case. So there's multiple legitimate reasons why light rail is only capable of providing service to a very small fraction of the population, whereas, you know, other alternatives like, you know, building more highway, building more lanes, you know, working on ways to alleviate the current bottlenecks that we see, you know, would be a far greater benefit to passengers and commuters and travelers around the Triangle area.
I mean, I'm right there with you on this. I can't see myself being an adopter of light rail. I did use public transportation when I was in college. I used the bus system, and I this was even when I had my truck, because my truck was parked a mile away, or more than, it was almost 2 miles away at the freshman parking lot, and the bus was a better option in a lot of ways. But all I had to do was be in that one town. I had to be in Boone. That was all I had to do, and it worked for me there. But it's just not the reality of the area we live in. I'm right there with you.
Yeah, and compare also, you know, these kind of new innovations that are coming online that offer more flexibility. You know, we have the Uber, the ride sharing. I mean, there's talks about self-driving cars that are coming closer and closer to fruition. I mean, think about the flexibility those offer, and at a far, I mean, unbelievably more efficient, you know, price point, you know, cost to people than this, again, inflexible, inconvenient, wildly inefficient in terms of economic terms, you know, wildly expensive light rail. And we're talking just about the construction costs here. When we're talking about that $2.5 billion price tag, that's not even taking into consideration the ongoing operation costs year after year. And typically all these light rail projects, they need to be subsidized year after year just for the operations, because, you know, they charge the tolls or the tickets for the light rail ride that's much lower than sufficient to cover the cost. So then taxpayers are on the hook for subsidizing it year in, year out as well. I just think it's terribly inefficient use of scarce resources. And when resources, especially this amount of resources, $2.5 billion, maybe even up to $5 billion, are directed towards inefficient means, society is made worse off.
All right. Well, that about wraps it up right there. Can't really add too much to it. Thank you for coming on and talking with us about the light rail project.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Have a good one. Okay, thank you to Brian for coming on and talking with us about that, and thank you to you, the listeners. I'm not going to bore you again by going through the whole spiel, but make sure you're subscribed, following along on social media. Check out the older episodes on freedomactionnetwork.com. We'll catch you later.